Hello and welcome to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips. And tonight, we look at what it takes to deal with your HR department, whether you're an internal candidate or an external candidate. How do you interact with them so you can get promoted, so you can get a raise, so you can make more money? Not just that, but we're getting all the other insights, like what happens to your CV when you send it to HR and you never see it again? Is there a black box there? Are we doing something wrong? We're going to find out, because tonight we have some of the top HR professionals in the region with us. We have Hessa Al Guerrer, who's the Chief People Officer at Tamfif. We have Abdulaziz Al Musa, who's the Head of Recruitment and Manpower at Abu Dhabi Commercial Bank. We have Gavin Walford Wright, the HR Director at Do. And they're going to be giving us their insights from inside the hot seat, the hot engine room of HR. And not only that, after that, we're going to hear from the C-suite, from the top office, from the boardroom, the Chief Executive Officer of Indigo Properties, who we can test their HR strategies out on the top dog here and see if they work. Dev Maitra is also going to give us insights into what's happening in the property market. Should you buy? Should you sell? Should you rent? What should you do exactly? And what are the hot buys? He's already given me an insight into what the top buy in Dubai is right now for property. I have gotten the insight, and we're going to share it with you shortly. But enough from me. Let's get to our guests. Our first guest here is Gavin Walford Wright, the HR Director of Do. Gavin, welcome to Eye on Careers.
Thank you, Shane.
It's a pleasure to have you here. And our second guest, Abdulaziz Al Musa, Head of Recruitment and Manpower Planning for Abu Dhabi Commercial Bank.
Hi, good evening.
And last but not least, Hessa Al Guerrer, the Chief People Officer at Tamfif.
Hi, everybody.
Thanks for coming. And Hessa, I think you've been racking up the awards as well in your HR department in Tamfif, haven't you?
Yeah.
What are some of your recent awards that you've won there?
And I believe it's a long way to go. It's only the beginning for me and for my team as well. The latest one is the one from the U.S., the Golden Award for our two certifications.
Right, your two certifications. And what was the one before that?
We won the Shrum Award as well, which was more of the Oscar Award for us.
Okay, excellent. Well, congrats. I think some of the things you're doing are really good, and it's glad to see. But I think since we have, a nice mix of expats and locals here, one of the hot topics that people are really dealing with is amortization, which personally I don't really think it's an issue here in the region. I think there's just so much job growth for anybody. But localization is sweeping the GCC, and I have expat friends who feel like maybe the Emiratis are going to be taking their jobs and maybe firing them. And Emiratis, some of my Emirati friends are saying, hey, expat managers aren't hiring Emiratis they're not giving them their jobs as well. So it's kind of like the same thing on both sides. Who wants to step up to the amortization question first? I think Abdulaziz said he'll go for it. So what is there any truth in this?
Well, I think there's a truth in this. It's not a myth, but I think it's most likely some of the cultural issues with both sides. Confident people, where they're confident with their skills, with their competencies, they're very much competent. I think they don't have an issue with recruiting a UAE national or an expat in their companies, because they're looking for competent people. They're looking for competent staff to join them and to groom them. Whoever is insecure with his position, incompetent, then he has the fear of fear from the competition.
Right.
So,
what do you think, Gavin?
I think we have a moral responsibility, certainly coming from an expat perspective, to develop and grow local talent. Part of that is investing in the training and the development of the Emiratis that we have, and also to make sure that we're bringing the next generation of leadership through. At the moment, we don't find any particular issues with expats being insecure in the roles that they have. We think that we have expats doing expert or particularly technical roles, but we also make sure that we have a succession plan of sort of young Emirati talent coming through the flow to ensure that we have the longevity of the organization as well as the country in our foremost of our minds.
And Hazza?
Well, I would agree with Gavin here. Basically, we need expats all the time to support young Emiratis to come up the curve, be it learning, be it performance managing them. So I don't think there is a threat, but it might come from different people, and I believe this is across the world. You will always have people who are worried of probably the new generation to take over and vice versa. It's not only in the UAE, I would say. I believe it's across the world.
Right. I was at a conference, and I think one of the senior Emiratis came up and said, listen, there's, you know, they said, yeah, the expats are saying Emiratis are taking job. Emiratis are saying expats are taking their job. He said, listen, there's more registered companies in the UAE than there are working Emiratis. So both camps have to be wrong. It's impossible that there's more private companies registered that any Emirati can take your job, and vice versa, that you've just had such a strong growth. But I think in other regions it may be much more real. I think we have someone, we have a top HR consultant from Saudi Arabia, Hani Turki. Hani, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, Shane. How are you?
How are you? Thank you so much for calling in. What is the status of localization in Saudi Arabia? A lot of people are saying that expats are getting driven out of Saudi Arabia, that it's a very real process over there. Is there any truth to that?
I have a big question mark on this question. First of all, let me say I agree with my colleagues, the lady and the two gents who just spoke. I think it's the same situation out here as well. There will always be a room for expats. I mean, there are certain professions the locals cannot do, even training, even performance management, whatever. We might shrink the expat market, but we can never overtake it all the way.
Right. When we look at some of the most successful economies, though, in the world, you look at America has more millionaires per capita than any other country. And specifically, they're successful because they allow people from any country. If you're intelligent, if you're enterprising, you know, you have your shot at the American dream. We even saw the governor of California, Arnold Schwarzenegger, all the way from Austria. Isn't this part of a successful economy to encourage diversity, and isn't that, you know, the bedrock of Dubai's success? Should Saudi, you know, not try to minimize the expat exposure but increase it to drive their GDP up?
We're not shrinking the expat market, but we're trying to promote the locals to work. I mean, we have a lot of unemployed people here, locals. We have to get them to work eventually for the country to succeed. We have to get our young generation working. It is the duty of all the Saudis here. The government is working hard, making a lot of programs to help them work. But as I said, expats will always be here, anywhere else in the world.
Hani, thank you so much for giving us a bit of a flavor from the rest of the GCC, and you know, we wish you a lot of luck. I understand you're in the process of setting up a hospital there, so we wish you all the best with that.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Shane.
Thank you. That was Hani Turki, a leading HR consultant from Saudi Arabia. Coming up, we're going to be talking about some of the other challenges and how the mandatory military service is going to make it even more challenging for our HR professionals here in the studio to meet those amortization targets. So stay with us.
Dubai Eye 103.8. Stay one step ahead.
Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips, and we have an HR panel here. So for anyone who wants to know how to get an interview, how to get a promotion, how to get a job, what happens to your CV when you send it to HR and you don't hear anything back, keep on listening. We're going to be answering all of these questions, and we have some of the top HR professionals in the United Arab Emirates with us. We have Hessa Al-Ghurair, who's the Chief People Officer at Tanfif. Hessa, welcome back to Eye on Careers.
Thank you.
And we have all the way from Abu Dhabi, Abdulaziz Al Musa, Head of Recruitment and Manpower Planning at Abu Dhabi Commercial Bank. Abdulaziz, welcome back to On Careers.
Thank you.
And we have Gavin Walford Wright, HR Director at Do. Welcome back, Gavin.
Thanks, Sean.
Gavin, I think Do is one of the largest companies actually here in the country, right?
Yeah, we got around about 1,500 employees across the UAE.
So it's not. I think you have a swimming pool in your office too. No, or is that another company?
No, we have a swimming pool. We have a gym. We have a doctor's facilities. Employee welfare is very important to us.
That sounds pretty good. I might send my CV over by the end of the show. But a lot of people say when they send their CV, they don't hear anything back. And by the way, the best part about the show, it's interactive. So if you're out there, if you're listening, if you have a question for HR, or maybe you sent Gavin a CV and you haven't heard back, you can SMS us at 4001. You can SMS us at 4001, and we can... We'll address your question directly. But a lot of people, when they send their CV, they don't hear anything. So then they feel like, to get around that, they should go to the HR person, or, if we know Usman Sultan, we could give him a call and say, hey, man, I really want to work with you. And then, Usman then tells Gavin, hey, you got to look at this, but probably wouldn't do that. But, I'm just thinking this up. Maybe you would. I don't know if you're lucky enough. They feel that's a much better approach. What happens, what do you think, is there any truth to this, that CVs are just going into a black box, never to return? And what's the best way to deal with HR when you're in the job hunting mode? And I think we'll start with Gavin this time.
Okay. So I think these days, with the technology that's available, especially with things like LinkedIn, job seekers can see exactly who the line manager is. They can see the role. They can see who's in HR. They can pretty much map out the organization. So it is tempting for them to go directly to a line manager or someone directly in HR. The reality is, dependent on the brand of the organization, the size of that brand attracts a huge amount of direct applicants. Those applicants would normally go through a applicant tracking system, which is attached to the company's website, and then it goes into a CV database. That should be an interactive CV database that is searchable by the talent acquisition or recruitment team. And it should be actively searched on a regular basis and matched up to role profiles as they come in. The reality is, the bigger the brand, the higher amount of CVs that come through. And it's not strictly possible to go through and look at each individual CV and give a personalized response to each one. So a lot of companies, a lot of businesses will have a standardized email that says, we'll get back to you within 24 hours or 48 hours if we're particularly interested in your profile. If not, we'll keep you on file for future roles. And that is really realistically the response that comes through. But certainly the organizations I've worked in, those CVs are stored in a database. They are searchable. And if roles come up, we have the technology to be able to auto-connect those CVs to positions as they come through as well. So it doesn't go into a black hole from my perspective, but you don't always get a personalized response.
Right. Now, once it goes into the database, though, it's really based on buzzwords, whether they come up, right? So, if I'm a recruitment person, but I think I'm more of a leadership solutions guy, well, if I write leadership solutions and, you're like, okay, we need a recruiter, then my CV is not going to come back out of the database. It's going to sit there. So a lot of it is how you set up the metadata now. And some candidates are in white ink writing all the key buzzwords that are to do with their profession so the search engine can pull their CV up.
Yeah.
So I think that could be part of the problem too. If you don't have the right language on your CV, you're not going to come out of that data bank again.
Yeah. Look, it's a key problem. I think the people that you'd want to look for that have the capability of doing the particular roles that we're looking for would be able to write a comprehensive CV that would include those type of keywords or buzzwords, as you're saying. The other thing is the proliferation now of video interviewing and video applications, which is coming through, which gives a much more qualitative feel in terms of the recruitment, and also gives a more in-depth approach to each candidate. So both the type of CV and the way you write it, and also the way that you sort of interact with sort of new technology like video interviewing is very important. That all connects through, I believe, as well as social media. So when I have a candidate which I think is particularly strong, not only will I check out their CV, I'll also go through their LinkedIn profile and anything else that's sort of publicly available online.
So about you be careful what's on that Facebook.
Exactly. Let's build a profile.
Because they qualify you on information, but they hang you on information as well. So sometimes too much information can be harmful. Abdulaziz, what do you say? Is this the wrong thing? If I go directly to the line manager, you know, if I know Ala at ADCB and call him up and say, hey, you know, really want to, you know, be your private banker, or should I go first through you? Does it make a difference as well if they know Ala, you know, when you're dealing with them?
Well, I think possibly they can very much, and they do connect with the line manager, and that's also very much normal. But it's easier for them to get in touch directly with the HR department or recruitment team. They know whenever they send the CVs, if they send the CVs randomly, then they know that the CV would go into a data bank or a database. If they apply for a particular job, then there's a bigger opportunity for them to be interviewed or to be at least shortlisted if the CV is set up in a proper way. So it basically depends on their capability of writing a proper CV and also on their approach. If they send just randomly, they send their CVs randomly, then the opportunity for them is lower. If they send it for a particular job, the opportunity is higher.
Okay, so you're saying just be more focused, and the biggest problem is people are just random CVs. Any job will do. Let's see what I pick up, and that's guaranteed to fail.
Yes.
So a lack of focus in the 21st century is the first way to basically kill your career, I guess. Basically, knock yourself out for any opportunity. Hessa, what do you think on the issue?
Well, there is two sides for the story. Now, you will have the job seeker who really want to be called, interviewed, and offered probably on the spot. And you have the organization itself. What do I need as an organization? Would I actually entertain those CVs or go back with a response? Be it yes, we'll get back to you in the future, or no, you're overqualified. The whole idea is to be clear. Now, going back to Abdulaziz's point where, well, we love to network. So, of course, if I know Abdulaziz, I will go directly to him and apply for a job. That helps. Networking is a key in this part of the world, and it will continue. That doesn't mean that HR should forget the normal processes, evaluate, assess, and then select based on competencies. So, both of the stories are correct. Now, it depends where you are exactly from this whole equation. Are you a job seeker who is desperate for a job, or are you an organization who want to hire cream de la cream?
So basically, it's a mix. So you say it's okay to go to the line manager because it can help. I mean, HR gets swamped, right? Recruitment is just one part of your job. You get swamped in so many other things. As Gavin said, you can't go through all these CVs. So sometimes having the line manager involved in the process helps get things across the line. In other cases, it's not the right thing to do. So no clear go on this one. Internally, though, I find as well candidates completely avoid HR like the plague. You know, not only when they're trying to get the job, but after they get the job, they avoid HR as a plague. Is this the right way? Is there things that, you know, in terms of what I call job crafting? So some people have a job role, but they start to add different responsibilities on their own and start to create the job to fit what they want to be doing, and they usually leave it to their own devices to make their career plan. Should they be interacting with HR? Is that the right thing to do? And are you really set up to assist, especially even senior executives? How should internal candidates interact with HR? Does anybody feel a burning desire to tackle this one first?
Yeah, I can start.
Okay.
Okay. And I speak out of experience, especially in Tampid. While setting up the HR department, we clearly wanted to be around with the employees rather than a black box, again, referring to the first question. So the whole design of HR actually evolved around the employees, starting from the day they get hired till the day they get promoted, engaged, the whole engagement activities on the floor. And we basically have an HR person in charge of around 200 employees. And that person is exactly similar to the head of HR. So he or she is doing exactly my job on a smaller scale and attending all the requirement from A to Z. So we have moved from that black box.
So you've moved that. So that's a much more advanced model. I don't think most of the companies have that. And that also sounds from an HR perspective, you're creating a succession plan even for the HR department with that. Abdulaziz, what's your take on that?
Well, again, it's basically depends on the HR people. Where do they want to position HR? If they want to position HR as a strategic business partner, then yes, they will be very much engaged with the employees. Employees would be number one. And they will look at it from a competitive advantage. How can I be more engaged, more with the employees, and all the issues that you mentioned earlier would go away, because the business would see me as a value added person rather than a cup or compliance person. Where if I'm an individual with the old HR, or what we call it earlier, the personal departments, then I'm a person that adds no value, then I'm a black box. So it's basically depends on the HR leaders. Where do they want to position HR? Not only the HR leaders, the leaders of the organization, where do they want to position HR exactly?
And Gavin?
Yeah, I think Abdulaziz is absolutely correct. The old days of personnel administration within HR have long gone, or they should be long gone in most organizations now. And HR is a strategic business partner. That's what it should be. The bottom line, HR role now is to improve company performance. That is the sole goal of HR. We hold the moral compass for the organization, and we have to drive company performance. We do that through making sure we've hired the best talent, we retain the best talent, we retain and develop and grow the organization through the sort of learning and development opportunities that we give our colleagues. But as a whole, HR has shifted seismically over the last few years to an organization or part of an organization that is focused and strategically aligned to the business. It's not this compliance department that sits around writing policies and procedures for people to adhere to. It's about enabling performance and enabling the people we have in the organization to grow and develop and add value.
Great. This is the HR panel here on Ion Careers. Coming up after the break, we're going to be addressing some of the audience, questions. Sorry there. If you could be a bit more specific, I mean, we have people writing in. I'm a professional marketer with 10 years experience and nothing else on that. So I don't know if that's a question or just a statement that you want people to know you're in marketing. If there's a question there, please let us know. And someone was asking us to play a film, a Tamil film. I don't know how I can comply with the request. So if you have questions specifically for the HR panel, we will be tackling those. And there are quite a few. So thank you. And we'll be right back.
Dubai Eye 103.8, keeping you up to date with what matters in the UAE. Stay one step ahead.
Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips, and we are looking at what it takes to get a raise, to get promoted, to get that new job, to get an interview, how to get, or maybe even how to get around HR, or how to get through them or work with them. I think our guests here, we have some of the top HR professionals from the region in the studio, and they all gave me the look when I said that. So I think they want you to work with them. We have Gavin Walford Wright, the HR director at Do, with us. Welcome back, Gavin.
Hi.
We have Abdulaziz Al-Musa, head of recruitment and manpower planning, for all the way from Abu Dhabi Commercial Bank. Welcome back, Abdulaziz.
Thank you, Shane.
And Hessa Al-Gharer, chief people officer at Tanfif. Welcome back.
Thank you.
So, we have one individual here who says he sent 400 CVs and he only got 5 replies. And I don't know, what's the biggest reason why you don't apply? I mean, number one, I think a lot of people, because it's so easy now to send a CV, you're just clicking a mouse, they're applying for jobs they're not qualified for. Number one, they're sending cover letters that are dear ma'am, sir, which are kind of worthless anyway, so you just shouldn't send those, in my opinion. Correct me if I'm wrong. I'm just saying what I think the biggest reasons are. Number three, they try to be all things to all people. So your CV is trying to cover, you know, a multitude of jobs, and there's no focus there. What do you think are the biggest reasons why CVs are not being responded to?
From my perspective, again, there is no focus on the CVs that the people apply for. I look at the.
Sorry, what do you, so you look, so when you're looking at the CVs, you look at what exactly?
I look at the CVs. I mean, in less than 5-10 seconds, you'll be able to figure out whether the CVs is. You can consider it to for screening or not. So you look at the last experience, you look at the qualification. But the most problem occurs with the job seekers, they're not focused. They'll send the CVs for anything. When I look at my system, the website, I see the same individuals applies for like 6 or 7 jobs, different jobs, starting with operation, go to the front line, and goes into a very specialized area like credit or treasury. You can't do everything. Otherwise, you'll be a one-person bank.
Sure. So focus is a big theme here. Any other major themes as to why these CVs are ineffective?
Yeah, I would agree with Abdelaziz. Actually, probably the same job seeker would be applying right and left for any job. You will have graduates asking for CEO's role. Yes, I respect the ambition, but let's start on step one and talk about your career first.
That's very politically correct. I respect the ambition, but okay.
So I really like those guys who come and say, I want to be a manager, and he just graduated a couple of months ago. And he straight ahead is like, I want to be a manager. Fine, have you ever managed a team? No. I'm like, fine, just try it for a few days with me, which basically the work placement. Try it, can you handle a team of 8? And let me know by the end of the week. That clearly says it all.
And Gavin, what do you think?
Yeah, I think what Abdelaziz is saying is it's about targeted search. So it's reflection on your own sort of abilities, your experience, and making sure that you apply for a role that actually fits those skills and experience rather than aspirational roles. The problem, again, with a lot of job seekers is they're looking at organizations and just to be in that organization. So you'll have the same job seeker applying for, the highest I heard recently was about 127 different positions over a period of 12 months.
In the same company?
In one company, yeah.
Wow.
And then they complain that they haven't been selected. But clearly, the fact that when you've gone through the first 30 applications, you sort of lose interest in going through the CV and trying to pair it to other roles.
As soon as you see his name, you just delete him.
Exactly. And that's the negative impact of doing that. The idea is you have a targeted search, you focus on the role that you want, that you're capable of doing, and you apply for that role. And then you can use the opportunity to search through LinkedIn, try and contact and reach out directly to line managers or to HR. But applying for a high number of roles in the same organization with a huge variance of skill set and requirements, it just does you more harm than good.
More harm than good. The other thing which I don't think we touched on is the jumpiness. I think there's a couple questions here from the audience. Is what's the reasonable time to be in a role? And I don't know what you think. My personal opinion is, you know, I think 4 to 5 years in a position allows you to get the full strategic cycle, really allows you to come up with concepts, implement them, course correct them, and see the fruit of those results. Now, that's just a general guy. Every job is different, so some jobs might be less, some jobs might be more. What's your take on the tenor that people should be looking for, and do you disqualify people for being jumpy?
From my perspective, it depends on the market and it depends on the type of organization you're working for. If you go and work for a tech business and you stay in that tech role, in the same role for 4 years, you're out of date. I think it depends on the market as well. So the UAE, the Middle East as a whole, the GCC in particular, has a huge growth. It's a very entrepreneurial place to work. There's a lot of opportunities regularly coming up. And also, if you look at sort of the generational differences between a sort of Gen Y employee that's coming through now
versus sort of an older, more tenured person, then the expectations of someone that's sort of 45, 50, it will be that they have to spend a minimum of, as you say, sort of 5+ years in a role to show that they've demonstrated the right skill sets and delivered in that position. Where in reality, Gen Y would expect to probably spend 2 to 3 years in a role before they move on. And that might be 2 to 3 years in the organization before they move on to another role. So for me, it's more about the individual, what they've achieved during that period of time, and making sure that we're constantly developing people and giving them the opportunity to progress their careers as well.
Well, I don't agree that there is a cap or there's an ideal tenor or ideal time for me and then I need to move on. I think minimum I need to spend 2 to 3 years in a role, but I don't think I can be in my role for 10-15 years if I still can add value to the role. If I can still add value to the organization, I think I can stay in my role for as long as I can add value. The important here of a value adding, if I stay in my role and I continue doing only routines, then I don't think I'm required, but I think it's mostly how can I cope up with the market? How can I cope up with the technology? How can I cope up? How can I be different from the other? How can I differentiate my brand, my name from the others? I think this is the
main thing. Hassa?
Well, the question is not really clear. Is it the in tenor. The role or the being in the organization itself? Now,
because in the organization.
Yeah, so within the organization, you can grow from an agent all the way to a CEO. There is no limit. And it depends on how much do you really want to give to this organization. So for me, I'd agree with Abdelaziz here and say it depends on which organization you are and economy as well.
But what's the minimum time you think you should stay in an organization for? You know, have you disqualified people? Say, hey, this guy's got four jobs and been through four companies in 4 years, disqualified? Or are you saying, hey, he's been through four companies in 4 years, he's got a good exposure of different processes, he knows the competitors, he could be interesting?
Yep, both are right, actually. Both of them are right. So it depends what are you looking for exactly. So yeah, I will question why did he kept on moving. That would actually explain maybe the company, something happened, CEO change. You never know how the economical situation is. But I'll consider both, actually. And after the interview, I'll decide. I won't disqualify on the spot. I'll disqualify if it is a bit shady, as in name of the organization, details around it. Then yeah,
shady organizations are gone. That you disqualify from shady organizations faster than jumpiness. Because I disqualify from jumpiness right away.
So depend which industry are you in and what sort of resumes are actually reaching you at the end.
Right. If you have any questions for our HR panel, SMS us at 4001. We've harped enough on the negatives. What are some of the positives? What are some of the things that you really go into looking for when you're hiring? What are some of the traits of a top performer? Or what are some of the traits of someone who's going to be really successful in your respective organizations? Because again, you know, what's successful in Tanfif will be different than what's successful in Do and definitely be different in Abu Dhabi Commercial Bank. Maybe there's some universal themes. Does anyone feel like tackling this one first? Or if you want, I can go first. If you know.
Yeah,
Hessa, you have a big smile on your face there, so... We'll go with you.
Okay, but basically what today, like my best pick would be a person who will be high in intrinsics, and I'll be looking at a person who's willing to learn, ability to learn, agility as well, adaptation. How can they adapt? How can this person actually adopt new processes? Mm-hmm. How can they demonstrate leadership? How can they resolve complex sort of issues, deal with leaderships and internal processes as well. This is what I'm looking for.
Okay.
For an ideal candidate.
So ability to learn, leadership, ability and problem solving.
Yeah.
Abdelaziz?
Well, it is mostly the same here. I recruit for behaviors and I train for skills. If the behavior is good, then no matter what,
so
I'll be able to train that individual, and I'll be able to make a good employee out of him.
What's the good behaviors?
The willingness, well, I see it in two ways, or and I have a theory that the successful employees have three main pillars, which is behavioral, punctuality, and performance. So the behavioral is willingness to learn, the agility, the commitment. That's all comes into behaviors. If you have that, then the skills are skill trainable.
Okay, and Gavin.
Yeah, I think the buzz phrase at the moment is hire for attitude and train for skill. I think that holds out as well here as anywhere else in the world.
Hire for student and train for skill?
Hire for attitude, and train to skill, which is basically what Abdulaziz is saying. The key points when we're looking at bringing people in are people that we feel that can fit culturally within the organization. So there's different layers when you look at candidates and you interview them for the process. So you'll generally find that you'll have a technical interview, which will be done by a line manager, will be specific around the certain skills that are required for that role. And then you'll have a HR interview, which is more around the cultural fit within the organization. And what you looked for sort of maybe 5 years ago was someone that fitted quietly and neatly and comfortably into the department of the organization that wouldn't upset the apple cart, as we'd say. These days we're looking for someone that's a little bit disruptive, and we believe that someone that comes into the organization that's willing to challenge the status quo, that has a positive disruptive atmosphere, or create a positive disruptive atmosphere, can actually add a lot of value. So rather than everyone sailing in the same direction very quietly, we do want people that can bring different experiences from different cultures and different organizations into play, and challenge the status quo and challenge the way that we've done things previously, and try and add value and change the direction of what we're doing in the future.
This is the HR panel, and coming up we're going to find out how all our guests got their first job, then after that we're going to be also hearing from the Chief Executive Officer of Indigo Properties. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
Dubai i 103.8, award-winning news, business, sport, and lifestyle coverage. Stay one step ahead.
Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips. The best part about the show is it's interactive. So if you have a question, SMS us at 4001, and it's a good time to do that because we're here with an HR panel, some of the top human resource professionals from all over the United Arab Emirates. We have one who's come all the way from Abu Dhabi Commercial Bank. We have the head of recruitment and manpower planning, Abdulaziz Al-Musa. Welcome back, Abdulaziz.
Thanks, Shane.
We also have from Tanfif, Hessa Al-Guerrero, the Chief People Officer. Welcome, Hessa.
Thank you.
And from Du, one of the biggest companies in the region, one of the biggest telecom companies anyway, is Gavin Walford-Wright, the HR Director at Du. Welcome, Gavin.
Thanks, Sean.
So we've covered, you know, how to use your CV, how to apply for a job, how to deal with all of these different issues. We have an individual here who's been having trouble getting a job for 2 years. Let's see if we can help him. Reagan, are you there?
I am, Shane.
How are you doing?
I'm good.
Thanks for calling in here. So I understand you had a job for 8 years and then unfortunately lost your footing there. You lost your job. And you've been struggling for the last 24 months to get your foot back, get some solid ground there.
Yes, that's correct. I was working in a large group in Dubai as a communications manager. And due to downsizing, I lost my job. And it's been over 2 years now. Of course, I've been looking around the place. But though there are jobs that come up quite often on many of the job sites, I do all the applications. But I haven't really been getting any interview calls.
Is this when you say communications? It's like PR. So you know you would
yes,
manage the
communications. Exactly.
Okay.
Yes. Well, PR is a subset of that. It's internal communications as well for an organization.
Okay. Internal. So also if the CEO is talking, you advise them. All of that.
Yes, yes, sitting in with the CEO for interviews or briefing them for interviews.
Well,
like
what my take on this, and I don't know what the what our panel is. I think your CV is obsolete. It's a 500-year-old piece of document that I don't think you should work anymore. You know, if you're a PR person or communications person, I think you should just start doing your job, you know, getting out there, helping with communications for companies, asking them what they can do, work as a freelancer. You can also pick up articles. I think they pay about a dirham a word if you can work as a freelancer and start getting your name out there. Are you doing any freelance work?
Correct. No, I can't just because of the, I'm not registered as a freelancer, so I need to change my visa if I need to do that. It's not something that you can hop around doing if you were probably in your home country.
Okay. Well, let's see what the panel thinks. What do you think are some of the things? It's Reagan, is it?
Yes.
Reagan can do. Anybody? Not all at once. Not everybody. Or you ask him a question, or what do you think?
I just want to know how did he lose his job, or how he lost his job.
He said downsizing. So it wasn't anything you did. You weren't caught sleeping at your desk or anything, right?
No, there was downsizing across the group, and from every department, there were about two people, at least two, had to go. And
what I would say is, I once worked for 3 months for free to get a job. And so I would say, if you're worried about the legal implications, go out and do the freelance and don't get paid. And then you might even have the guilt factor in saying, listen, I couldn't take any payment. And they'll say, listen, maybe we should bring this guy in. A PR is something that all you need is a pen and a paper to really start doing. There's no barrier to entry. It's not like a radio production where you need a studio and other things to do it. Einstein couldn't get a job, and it didn't stop him from doing physics. While he worked in the mailroom in between sorting letters, he was doing physics equations. So don't wait for someone to give you permission to do your job. You can start working now. That's what I would say, and get into it.
Thanks for that.
I think Gavin has something. I see Gavin's writing some notes down here. So, Gavin, what's the advice for our friend here?
Okay, so Reagan, thanks for calling in as well. I really appreciate it. There's a couple of things that's going through my mind. The type of things that would be asked or reviewed from your CV or any applications that you made. They'd want to obviously look at the experience that you've had and the quality of your experience, and also the amount of time you've been spending within corporate communications. Okay. They'll also look at the qualifications that you have to make sure you have a degree and your degree qualified, to find out if you are bilingual. And obviously being in Dubai, speaking English and Arabic and sometimes French is a real positive. And they'll also consider, which is your biggest issue at the moment, is the amount of time out of industry that you've had. And 2 years is significant. And I think now the pressure is really on for you to get back into a role. That might not be your dream role. It might not be the role that you stay in for the rest of your life. But you need to get back into a role where you can work your way through. And that might be something along the lines of, obviously, you're a corporate communications manager before. You might have to go take a step back and be a corporate communications officer or a specialist or a coordinator. You might have to do a sort of a slightly broader PR role. And you've got a lot of options, right? There's a huge amount of corporate communications companies setting up. So presumably you were in-house before for a large group. You might have to take that step out and go agency side for a period of time until you build those relationships and build those contacts, which gives you the opportunity to then move back in-house again. But getting back into work is the key thing for me.
Okay, thanks Gavin. Could I just say something?
Yeah.
I'm analyzing what I've been through, what I seem to feel is that the industry that I was in, which is the construction industry, many large construction companies don't have communications as part of their what they do. So I think one area that I've lost out in is being in a construction industry for that long.
Yeah.
And not moving on from industry.
But I think
does that sound
No, I think PR is like HR. It's industry agnostic. I mean, you can see Gavin was in financial services. Now he's in telecoms. You know, I think it's more the skill set and understanding how to do that. But we're running out of time. Reagan, okay. I'll follow up with you offline and give you some pointers, and we can meet up for a cup of coffee.
Don't thank me
now because you may not enjoy the discussion. But thanks for calling in.
Okay, thank you.
Here we are. We're just running up on our final moment. Time flew. Do you guys have any advice for anybody out there who wants to take their career to the next level, or how they should think about their career? I can see one clear trend that everybody said, and what I like to call intellectual curiosity, is get intellectually curious about your career, about your profession. Pick up a book and read the number one book about your profession. You know, I was talking to a professional today who just didn't want to read, and I don't get it. You know, it's the easiest way to move yourself ahead. Pick up a book and read about your profession, right? Simple thing you can do. How about Abdulaziz? You look like you're ready to go there.
Yeah, I think my advice to everyone on this, be always positively dissatisfied. Once you reach the satisfaction level where you're very much satisfied with your status, with you're very much satisfied with your job, with your earning, then you would stop innovating and you'll stop development. So always needs to be positively dissatisfied. So you're very much eager, you're very much keen to learn, keen to develop, and then that would keep the sparks in and will keep you developing. So that will keep you reading, will keep you searching for new way of doing things. That will differentiate you and raise your brand equity.
Gavin?
Totally agree, Abdulaziz. And I think building on that, what else can you do? You can build your personal brand. I think the opportunity that we have now as individuals through things like LinkedIn and other varying forms of social media is to build that brand. Getting yourself out there, getting yourself known for the deliverables that you do, the successes that you have, the experience that you have is critical. We all know that any role that's going to be recruited, especially at a senior level, there will be a review of your online profiles, and that might be Twitter or Facebook or LinkedIn or any other. But building your personal brand, I think, is critical in the next sort of 5 to 10 years as the world grows into this sort of tech-savvy business.
Heza?
I agree with both of my colleagues here, and I believe, again, improving your own brand. Keep networking with people that you meet. We keep meeting people at different forums, conferences, and we probably lose track after some time. Just stay updated with your own industry. Try to learn what's actually new and widen your horizon. Keep networking. That's what I will always advise.
Well, thank you so much. We barely got to scratch the surface of your many decades of combined experience here in HR and helping people move their careers forwards and helping your organizations move to the next level. Hopefully we can have you on all again soon. I want to personally thank you all for coming on Eye on Careers this episode.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Coming up, we have a word from the corner office, a man who's commanding the boardroom himself, the chief executive officer of Indigo Properties, going to give us not only advice on how to get to the top, but he also give you an advice what to buy once you're there. What are the good property scores right now? I had the opportunity to sit with this individual earlier this week, and he gave me an insight on where the best buy is from a real estate perspective. I want to share it with you, so stay with us. This is one interview you definitely don't want to miss. Thank you.